Hi, good evening, everybody. I hope everybody had a wonderful, wonderful Pesach, uplifting, and it's been great. It's been a great, great few weeks since. Been busy. Thank God I had last week, just last week itself, in the last 9 days from last Shabbos through today. I leave out today, 8 days. I had an Ofrof, two weddings, two Sheva brachos, and a bar mitzvah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's
Wow.
whoo.
Gee.
Thank God. Thank God it's all good things. So Baruch Hashem for that. But it's been nice
Yeah.
and busy. Really. Oh, sure. Rub it in, Steve. Go ahead. Gosh. Wow.
Yes.
70s?
I'm walking. 70 degrees, absolutely.
Oh,
Always in
gosh.
California, even when it's raining. No.
Amazing, amazing,
No.
amazing.
You're
All
not
right.
missing anything out here.
Yeah, my hair. All right. But here's what's interesting, ladies and gentlemen. What we have right now during this time period, we are really in an interesting quandary. On the one hand, there's a certain level of excitement, there's a certain level of joy and excitement as we build towards the holiday of Shavuot. In fact, that's one of the reasons why when we count the Omer, normally when you're excited about something, you start and say, okay, there's 50 days left, and then only 49 and 48, and you start counting down. When we count the Omer, we actually count up. On the second day of Pesach, we said today is the first day of the Omer, and then it's the second and third, and we're counting up, not a countdown. It's a count up, and the commentaries are wondering why that is. So they talk about that it's not just a, we have an end result, an end point that we're just excited to get to, but rather it's a step-by-step building process from Pesach to Shavuot, where we are building and working on ourselves, and that today is day one of the regimen, and I and in my becoming a more refined person. Today is day two in the regimen, which is even better. And then three and four until you get to day 49, where we've completed ourselves. And then you get to day 50, which is the celebration. So on the one hand, this time period is a very exciting time. There's a lot of joy and excitement building. However, I don't know if you can see it on Zoom, but the beard is getting a little straggly already. And that is because during this time period, it's also a sad period. And why is it so sad? Is because we are mourning the loss of the students of Rabbi Akiva. The Talmud tells us that the students of Rabbi Akiva, there was a plague that came through and killed 24,000 of Rabbi Akiva's students. That's a tremendous number. 24,000 students died. And the Talmud asks, like, why? What was the rationale? Why was this happening? And the Talmud says, Shalonahagu kavod zebazeh, that they didn't display enough honor one for each other. There was a certain lack of respect in interpersonal relationship between themselves that God was unhappy with. And this was some form of reprimand. And 24,000 students died. I don't want to get into why that is the particular reprimand, why this is the punishment for them. But the fact of the matter is that it's recorded in Jewish law that we observe some level of mourning, some level of the laws of Avelut, some laws of mourning in respect for those students that died. In fact, many, many, many people have the custom to not shave and take haircuts. Many, many people have the custom between Rosh Chodesh until Lag BaOmer not to have weddings. There's a whole list of things that you would do as if one were actually mourning the loss of a parent or another relative. So Rabbi Yitzchak Breidowitz asked this question that I never thought about this dichotomy. On the one hand, there's joy. There's tremendous simcha as we build towards the greatest historical event in history, the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai. On the other hand, we have the mourning period for the students of Rabbi Akiva and these two what seem to be diametrically opposing feelings are at play. And how do we deal with that? And what are we supposed to do about it is really the question. So let's take a step back. We're all familiar in yesterday's Torah reading, perhaps one of the most famous verses in all of the Torah. Vi'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Loosely translated, you shall love your fellow as yourself. Famous verse, right? Everybody here, I'm sure, has heard it. Love your fellow, love your neighbor, love your fellow as yourself. Do you ever stop and really ask yourself a couple of questions on those three words? It's a very strange expression. Love your fellow like yourself. Mr. Nickel, can I pick on you?
Go ahead.
Okay. Who do you love the most in this world? Be honest.
Oh my God.
Really? God, you are such a high-level person. I would have never, unbelievable. You are way advanced. I don't think this class is for you anymore. You are so well above us. I think most people would answer, if they're honest, themselves. Okay, yeah, someone's going to argue and say, my children, we'll get there. But the natural inclination for a person, every person, is that they love themselves. In fact, the entire premise, excuse me, the entire premise of that phrase, love your fellow as yourself, is built on a premise that you love yourself. Right? How silly would it be? Love your neighbor like you do, and you pick some random dude. I don't love that guy, so why should I apply this to some? It starts with a basic premise that a person generally loves themselves. Yes, are we perfect? No, but I do love myself. Survival instinct will have it that I want to keep preservation of my life. This is actually codified. What, Brad? No. This is codified in Jewish law. It's a very difficult one. And I'm just going to throw it out there for you. If two people are walking in the desert and one guy has a canteen of water that's only enough for one person, what should you do? What should
Take
you
the
do?
whole
What?
canteen.
Who, you?
Yeah.
You're so selfish, self-centered. But you're right. The halakha is you don't give it to the other person and you don't even be nice and share it because if you share it, you're both going to die. The end of the day is chayecha kodmin. Your life takes precedence. Your life comes first. Now I know it rubs some people the wrong way because we always think of ourselves as altruistic, of giving of ourselves and chesed. That's true. But when there's a conflict between you and someone else, you come first. So therefore, the Torah says you should apply that love of yourself to someone else. Yes, are we all in agreement? This is pretty simple, straightforward. However, I have a huge problem with this. It's not true. How could the Torah ask me to love someone else to the same degree as I love myself? It's not normal. I love myself the most. How can I apply this to someone else? Love your fellow like your, doesn't say love your fellow as much as yourself, or work towards loving your fellow to the degree. It says, love your neighbor, love your, all right, the other, like yourself. And I'm asking you, that is not humanly possible. How can you actually love someone like yourself? No, Brad, I'm asking you a good question, right?
I was thinking about it. I heard Hillel. There's a Hillel that said, "Don't do unto others that you wouldn't want to do to
We're
yourself."
going to get to Hillel in a second, but it's not going to answer my question because Hillel is just taking the negative side of it. Don't that which is hateful to you, don't do to someone else. Okay, it's still the same premise. You come first. What you don't want done to yourself, you should apply. Make sure you don't do that to someone else. You don't like when people interrupt you, don't interrupt others. You don't like when people speak negatively of you, don't speak negatively of them. I get it. But the words are love your fellow as yourself. I want you to focus on one letter of that phrase. The pasuk, the verse does not state, you shall love your fellow like yourself. I know that's how it's translated, but that is incorrect grammar. It says, V'ahavta, you shall love l'reacha. What does l'reacha mean?
Who?
To your fellow. It does not say, V'ahavta reacha kamocha. Love your fellow. It says, V'ahavta l'reacha. Okay. Great, Rabbi. Good insight. Great observation. But what am I supposed to do with that? L'reacha. Why doesn't it just simply say, again, if we were the grammar people, we were the grammar police, we would say the verse, if it wants to tell us love your fellow like yourself, it should say what, Paula? V'ahavta reacha kamocha, right? What's l'reacha?
Two.
What I understand, that's the, what does that mean? Love to your fellow like yourself. Now we're not even talking English.
Well, maybe it's not your fellow.
Well, reacha is your friend. That's what the word means.
Sounds like.
Re'im, at your Sheva brachos, they're going to say, Re'im ahuvim. Re'im are friends. Come on, we've seen this verse tens of times, if not hundreds of times, and I'm asking you a simple, basic question. Jimmy, how, you hear my question? This is like the letter doesn't seem to be, or it's not translated, isn't it? It's not dealt with. V'ahavta l'reacha, it says. I want to share with you a Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch says, absolutely true. Tachman is right. He doesn't say that, but that's the gist of it. He says, Tachman is right. You can, the Torah cannot expect a person to love someone else, their fellow, exactly like themselves. It's not humanly possible. The natural inclination is we love ourselves. So what is the Torah asking me? Anything which pertains to my fellow, which is of interest and for his or her benefit, I should be considerate as if it were me. For example, let's say I know about a particular, I don't know, a stock. And I got, you know, not insider trading. I'm not condoning anything. I'm just saying good hot tip, legal, 100% legit, right? And I know my fellow would also appreciate. He's into the stock market and he likes this stuff. If I truly cared about him and I can make a boatload, and him making a boatload is not going to be any loss for me, I should be concerned about my fellow's financial well-being as if it were my financial well-being. If it's something important to me and you know it's something important to him, then you should let them know. The Torah is not saying to actually love another person like yourself. That can't be. But that which pertains to someone else, you should love that as it pertains to you and apply that for him as well. That's why it says, L'reacha. That which is to your friend, that which pertains to your friend, should be treated as much as you love it for yourself. You should love it for him as well. You hear the difference? Not love him, but love for him, the things for him, as if it were for you. First insight. But we have to go further. Because Brad brought up Hillel. Most of us, maybe all of us, are familiar with a very, very famous story about a potential convert that came before Shammai. Shammai, who was much more of an exacting, very, very focused individual, the person that the non-Jew came before him and said, Rabbi Shammai, I would like to convert to Judaism. Teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot. Those are the literal words he said. Teach me the entire Torah, al regel achat, on standing on one foot. Shammai says, ah, you're just messing around with me. You know the Torah is bigger than that. Get out of here. And he threw him out. The fellow then went to Hillel, And he asked him the same question. And he says, teach me the whole Torah, regel, achad, on standing on one foot. And Hillel teaches him exactly what Brad said. Ma desani lach, that which is hateful to you, losava lachavre, don't do to your friend. Idach, then the rest, right? Zil gemar, go out and learn it. Now go learn. I'm giving you the basic premise. The entire principle of the Torah is that which is hateful to you, don't do to someone else. The rest, go out and learn. Okay. Interesting story. But what kind of question, really? I mean, you guys have been listening to me for many, many, many years, and we haven't even scratched the surface of what Torah has to teach. If we took the combined collective knowledge of Torah of all of us, we still haven't scratched the surface. What does Hillel mean? You can teach him the whole Torah standing on one foot, just don't do to others what you wouldn't want done to you. Really? That's the whole Torah? But wait, it gets worse. Isn't that true only when it comes to interpersonal relationships? We know that the Torah is divided into two categories of mitzvot. Bein Adam Lamakom, mitzvot that pertain between man and God, and mitzvot that are bein Adam l'chaveiro, between man and his fellow. There's two different groups. For example, giving tzedakah clearly is interpersonal. That's bein Adam l'chaveiro. However, keeping Shabbos, keeping kosher, putting on tefillin, putting on tzitzis, lighting candles for Shabbat, none of that is interpersonal. That's between you and God. So how could Hillel say the whole Torah standing on one foot is interpersonal relationships? Don't do to others what you wouldn't want done to you. That's not true. There's another whole half of the Torah. You guys all have this look of either, wow, I can't believe I never thought of it, or I don't know what the heck he's talking about. I hope it's the first.
Could you repeat that?
Absolutely. The guy comes in, he says, teach me the whole Torah standing on one foot, and Hillel teaches him, don't do to others what you wouldn't want done to you, correct? Mr. Nichols, is it not true that the Torah has two parts? Those mitzvahs that are between man and God, the relationship that's just personal, you and God, and there's another section of the Torah between you and your fellow,
That's right.
interpersonal relationships. Hillel's answer is only the second one. Don't do to others what you wouldn't want done to. What about the mitzvahs that are between man and God? How could Hillel say the whole Torah is on this one premise, don't do to others? That's only part of the Torah. Where's the other part? That's my question. Mr. B,
I thought you
help me
said,
here. You hear my question? You make it sound like, all right, whatever, I'll let you get away with it. I'm asking you a bomb question here. I'm asking something that your brain cells should be exploding inside your head. This is a basic fundamental question. We've heard this Talmud 100 times, and we never thought to ask the simple question. What kind of answer did Hillel give him?
If you abide by the second one, isn't it automatically you're doing the first also?
Why is that? If I'm a nice guy to someone else, that helps me, that gives me credit for keeping Shabbos? How does that help me for putting on tefillin? How does that help me for eating kosher? Why? Because I speak nicely to you and I don't speak Lashon Hara? There's two different areas of Torah. I always tell all right, listen, let's go back. You know, one of the first things that we did, I think we did it in this group once upon a time. We did the Ten Commandments, right? The Ten Commandments famously are on two stone tablets, right? Moshe came down with two. I know Mel Brooks three. I know. Two stone tablets, right? And he comes down, and the first five are considered between man and God: belief in God, no other God, don't use God's name in vain, Shabbos. And the second group is don't murder, don't steal, and commit adultery. That's between man and his fellow. Two separate parts of the Torah. Dr. Spector, which one is more important between man and God or man to man? Don't answer that. The answer is they're both equal. It's two parts of one whole. I don't want to put you on the spot like that. It's two parts of, if a person is, I'll be blunt, if a person is the most religious guy and he's so good about his Shabbos and his kosher and his tefillin and all the between man and God, but he's not a mensch, he's just as lacking as the person who is the epitome of menschlichkeit, of such a wonderful person and excels in bein adam lachavero, interpersonal, and he's missing a relationship with God. They're both are worth half an esrog. That's what it is. It's two parts of one whole. So I'm asking you a simple question. Hillel's answer cannot possibly be understood simply as that he's the whole Torah on one foot, interpersonal relationship.
Question, I got one.
Go ahead.
Isn't the first question when you're asked, when you're in heaven, is how did you treat your fellow people in business?
And were you honest in business?
And were you honest in business? So wouldn't that mean that interpersonal relationships take precedent, signal that you have the other stuff as well?
So let's see. I'm willing to entertain that. Watch what happens here. Rashi on that piece of Talmud about the story with Hillel and that and the potential convert, Rashi says that when Hillel told it over, obviously it was based on the phrase from this parsha, Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Rashi says, who's reacha? Who is considered your friend? Who's your fellow? So you and I all understood it. That was talking about a person. Rashi on that piece of Talmud cites a verse in Mishle, in Proverbs, where God is also called your friend. And therefore, when the verse states, you shall love as it pertains to your fellow, your friend, that includes your human friend and your God friend. And it's all incorporated in one. That's how Rashi understands it. And he quotes that verse. However, there's more to this story, because I would even suggest that maybe Mr. Ellman is right. And not that.
We'll go that way.
I won't put it that way. That's just painful to say. What I mean is that I can't go ahead and say that interpersonal relationships are more important. I can't do that because they have to be two parts of one whole. They cannot be one over the other. However, perhaps what we find is that the key to unlocking everything is the interpersonal relationships. And if one excels in that, it has the potential to lead to the between man and God. And I'll show you two examples of where that's true. I conveniently left off when I talked about the Ten Commandments. And the five on one side and the five on the other. I don't know if you picked up on it. I did it quickly. I never discussed
your father and mother and father.
Yeah, I very, very conveniently left that off. Thank you for picking up on that. I did that purposely because if you think about it, it really doesn't belong on the first side. The first four, belief in God, no other gods, using God's name and not using God's name in vain, and keeping Shabbos are clearly between man and God. That's not even up for debate. But then you get to number five, honoring your mother and father. Whoa, Rabbi, somebody messed up here. That belongs on the interpersonal side. That's, you know, between a child and his parents. What? The Talmud already asked this question. I know, Mark, you were thinking it, but... Right? The Talmud asks it the question. The Talmud says when one of its answers is that is when a person honors their parent, God says, don't forget that there are three partners in the formation of a child. Mom delivers her part, dad delivers his part, and God also is a partner in all of this. God delivers the soul. So therefore, Hashem says that if a person truly honors their mother and father, I consider it, God says, as if I were there and you bestowed that honor to me as well. What it means to say, what I think the Talmud is telling us, is that the honoring of parents, which is really the epitome of an interpersonal relationship of expressing gratitude to someone who benefited you, obviously parents, it's the highest level, is part and parcel a mitzvah between man and God as well. They are connected. That's why it's on the first side. It isn't just, oh, it's a connection. It also has it. No, it is the mitzvah between man and God. I'll show you another example. Famously, when God offered the Torah to the Jewish people, were we the first ones he offered it to?
No.
No. We're all familiar with the famous Midrash that tells us that God offered the Torah to the other nations of the world. And what was their response when given that what seemed to be an amazing opportunity? They asked
a question.
They asked, Maksivba, what's written in it? Give me a sample. Tell me what's in it. So to the descendants of Esav, he says, it says, you cannot murder. They're like, whoa, not for us. That's not for us. That we live by our sword. We're like the Crusades. We're going through and we're going to do what we got to do. Not for us. Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
And he goes to the descendants of Yishmael. And they ask the same question. Maktivba, what's written in it? And Hashem says, you can't commit adultery. Whoa, not for us. No, thank you. We like the loose lifestyle. No. To each one of them, he asks, do you want the Torah? They all ask what's in it. And for each one, I heard this insight just yesterday in Cleveland. I've seen this, I don't know how many times, and I never thought about it until the guy said it. I was blown away. All the examples of when that nation asked what's in it, the example or the sample that God shared with them were all interpersonal relationships. Not one of them was, well, you have to believe in God or don't use God's name. Any of the mitzvot that were related specifically between man and God, that never came up in conversation. It was only the mitzvot that were interpersonal between man and his fellow. And this guy who was speaking asked him, why? Why is that the example? And they all were like, no, thank you. The answer he gave is what Mr. Ellman said. And that is, when it comes to between man and God, other nations, they'll go for it. Yeah, I believe in some kind of deity. I believe in some kind of higher authority, higher power. Okay, yeah, I can go with that. But you're telling me that there's a concept of refinement of a human being and how I treat others? No, I'm not so, no. That's not religion. It's a nice idea. No, says God. The Torah that I'm offering you is the key. Yeah, I know you'll understand that there's a man to God relationship, but will you understand that the same God that is interested in having the relationship with you wants you to have a good relationship with other human beings? If you're willing to do that, then I have a gift for you. It's called the Torah. The key to all of it is, in fact, Bein Adam Lachavero, is between man and his fellow. This is what he suggested, and I thought it was a fabulous, fabulous insight. So now let's go back to the story. The fellow comes to Hillel, and he says, teach me the whole Torah while standing on one foot. What does Hillel teach him? All about Bein Adam Lachavero, all about interpersonal relationships. That's the key, he says. I asked you the question, what do you mean? What about the other part of the Torah? Don't worry. If you can harness the power and understand that there is a critical component about refining yourself and your relationship with others, you will also get. You will. It will come. That will be easier for you even. And therefore, what comes out is as follows. And this is what Rabbi Breidowitz was suggesting. This time period between Pesach and Shavuot, where on the one hand we're excited about building ourselves up towards the giving of the Torah, but at the same time, we have a period of mourning for the students of Rabbi Akiva, they're not contradiction at all. There's two things that we are going to work on to improve ourselves. The first thing is learning Ahavat Yisrael, of learning to love fellow people. That's number one. Every single day that when we count Svira, we're supposed to be looking within ourselves and saying, what's an area that I can improve in? You know, for those of you in more in the Kabbalistic realm, there's the idea that even though there's 10 Svirot, there's the 10 emanations, for the most part, we deal with the lower seven. The top three are usually way above, way out there. We deal with the seven. Our world, the physical world in which we live, deals with the seven. That's why there's 7 days of the week. That's why there's 7 years for the Shemitah cycle. That's why there's seven Shemitah cycles for the Jubilee. The number seven is the key, the lower seven, okay? The counting of Sfira, what we do, the counting of the Omer, is counting 7 weeks where each day within it contains the other six as well. That's why you have a 7x7 grid. I'll give you an example. I don't want to be too esoteric here. Mr. Nickel is really working hard to hold his head up. This is like way too late for this. The first of the spheres is known as Chesed. Chesed, kindness. Okay? The second one is called Gevura. We'll call it inner strength. Let's just pause for a moment. Okay? Day one of counting the Omer takes sphere number one, right? Chesed. And category one of one, what we would call Chesed of Chesed. Right? That's one, because Chesed is number one. So it's the first week, the whole week, number one is all about Chesed. Within each day of the week are those seven. Day one is Chesed of Chesed. Day two is Gevura of Chesed. Then comes Tiferet of Chesed. Right? That whole week, you have seven of them. Okay? What is week two? What's the theme of week two?
Gevura.
What do you think day one of week two is called?
Gevura of Chesed.
Close, the other way around. Chesed of Gevura. Correct. And day two of week two? Gevura of Gevura. And it continues that way, such that you cover seven categories. That's your 7 weeks. And each day of that week is one of the seven subcategories. Hence, you have a grid of 7x7, your 49 days of counting the Omer. Each day has a unique power that we're supposed to be tapping into. Day one is the epitome of kindness. It's the chesed of chesed. It's like chesed on steroids. Right? If you want, this hasn't blown your mind, just if you'd made a diagonal through the seven, obviously what you're going to get is the highlight of each one. Week two, number two, is the Gevura of Gevura. And number three will be Tiferet of Tiferet. It's on an angle. Until you get seven of seven, which is the last of them all. Right? Okay. What is so significant? The significance is that the counting of the Omer is working on our traits, character, refinement as a human being, as a Jew, my interaction with others. How am I building up myself so that my Bein Adam Lachaveiro, my interpersonal skills, my love for my fellow and that which pertains to him is growing? That is stage one. But then Hillel gave a second half, didn't he? He said, the whole Torah is what is hateful to you, don't do to others. The rest, the Idach Pirusha, the rest, Zil Gemar, go learn. What do you mean, go learn? The simple meaning is, okay, I gave you the basic principle, now go learn all the details. No, I mean, yes, it's true, but here's another way to understand it. And that is, he was telling him, there's a second half, and that is go learn all of the Torah itself. That, what we call Talmud Torah, the study of Torah, is in and of itself also rectification. And he gives a good proof. Who are we going to put on here? Polster. Mr. Polster. Rabbi Polster. Sorry. Okay.
I'm here.
Have you brought any sacrifices recently?
No. I mean, I could probably drum some up, but they're not exactly sacrifices.
You haven't brought any carbonate recently. Why not?
No temple.
Okay, so we don't have the temple in Jerusalem, and we're forbidden. You can't bring any actual offerings. Correct. But I'm asking you, is there a mitzvah in the Torah to bring offerings?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure is, buddy. That's right. That's why we unfortunately gloss through the first few parshiot of the book of Vayikra, the book of Leviticus, because we're like, yeah, whatever. It's not relevant today yet, right?
Right.
So that means to tell me, are you suggesting, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but are you suggesting that I can't fulfill the whole Torah anymore?
Right. There's some mitzvot we can't do right now. And there's some, I don't know how that pertains even in Israel. You have to be in Israel for some of them, right?
Yeah.
So
what are we supposed to do?
But you can't do them to your fellows. You can catch all those. You can do them to your fellows, and you can cash in on all those mitzvahs.
Hashem's
tied in. You're doing it for him too.
So you're suggesting that I should take one of my fellows and sacrifice him because that's, because there's a mitzvah to sacrifice, right?
There's probably a couple people here.
See you guys. Good night.
Perhaps there's another understanding, Jeff. The Talmud tells us that a person, especially when you can't do the mitzvah that's out of your control, when you study it and you learn about it, Hashem gives you credit as if you did it. You hear that? You can bring karbanot nowadays, not physically, but if you study, the laws of bringing sacrifices and you learn the lessons of them and you read through the text of the Torah with the commentaries and you get an appreciation, you get credit of doing the mitzvah. Hillel's teaching him two parts. There's two answers to your question, Mr. Potential Convert. Number one, the first thing you got to know, interpersonal relationships. And number two, you say, oh, but what about those that we can't fulfill or that have nothing to do with others? Oh, yeah. Study it. Zil Gemar, go out and learn it. Go learn it as if you had done it. So now you have, this is the perfect preparation between Pesach and Shavuot. Number one is we count the Omer of working on ourselves, improving ourselves. And number two is that we are preparing for the Torah being given by learning it. We take time to learn further about the Torah. So you have both parts. Okay. I'll show you how much deeper it really goes about this. This V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha is one of my favorite ideas to talk about. Having care and concern for others is the true mark of leadership in the Torah. Let's read two verses in the Torah. You all heard of this guy named Moses? Famous guy. I think Charlton Heston made him famous, right? You heard of him?
No.
Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu. He's born as a preemie. His mom's able to hide him for 3 months. Then she can't anymore. So she puts him in a basket, puts him in the Nile River. The daughter of Pharaoh comes out. She comes to bathe. She sees it's a Hebrew child. She decides to have mercy, takes him in, raises him up in the palace. So far, so good, right? It's Prince of Egypt, Ten Commandments. This is like everybody, there's no machlokin about that. Okay, great. Okay? Then what? He comes out of the palace and he sees an Egyptian striking a Hebrew, right? And he kills him.
I like the Prince of Egypt reference. That was good.
Pretty fly for a rabbi. But I want you to know I've never seen it. Here's what the Torah says. It's really mind-boggling. Okay, she takes him in. Fine. Here's what the Torah says. Vayigdal hayeled, the child grew up. Vatevieu lebas paro, and now Miriam, his sister, who had brought Moshe to be nursed by his mother Yocheved, now he grows up. She brings him back to the daughter of Pharaoh. Vayehi lo lebein, it is to her as a child, as a son. Vatikra shemo Moshe, she calls his name Moses. Vatomer, she says, kimin amayim mishitiyo, because I drew him from the water. What was the first two words? Vayigdal hayeled, the child grew up. Yes? Right, Paula, I'm translating correctly? Okay. Very next verse. Vayehi bayamim ahem, and it was in those days, a little bit while later. Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grows up. Vayetze alechav, and he goes out to his brothers. Vayar besivlotam, and he sees their burdens. Vayar ish mitzri, and he sees an Egyptian man. Make ish evri me'achav, striking one of the Hebrews, one of the Jews, one of his brothers. In a matter of two verses, it says that he grew up twice. The Torah is not interested. It's not Charles Dickens who gets paid by the word. That is not the Torah. The Torah says, and he grew up. And then it says, and Moshe grew up. It's two verses, one right next to the other. Very unusual. So the Ramban Nachmanides is bothered by this, and he tells us a tremendous insight. There's two types of growing up. Some of us have been fortunate to do one. Not all of us have been fortunate enough to do the other. The first is we become mature. We physically mature. We get older. Okay? We grow up. Others, like myself, never grow up. And we still behave, and we're still these young punks, think we run the world, da-da-da-da-da. Where the Ramban says is the following. Step number one is just vayigdal hayeled. The child grew up. Okay? He got older. She brought him back to the daughter of Pharaoh, and he grows up in the house of the palace. Next verse, listen to the word so carefully. Vayehi bayamim ahem, it was during those days. Vayigdal Moshe vayetze el echav. Moshe grew up and went out to his brothers, vayar besivlotam, and he saw their burdens. There's growing up and then there's growing up. Moshe in verse number one, he matured, he grew up. He became physical. He became a teenager, a young adult. Okay. He grew up. But the next verse says there's another kind of growing up. A growing up of where you mature to become a viable leader. How do you grow up? How do you see that? Because the words connected to he grew up are he went out to his brothers and he saw their plight. If you care about somebody, you show care and concern, that's maturity of the highest order. That's real growing up. Moshe, this is one of the indications of his true mark of his leadership. The first may have been a physical maturity, but the second was much more of an intellectual or a spiritual, or if you want, just a care and concern for someone else. That's the real sign of maturity. He went out and he saw the issues that his brothers and the burdens that they had. Okay. So let me come full circle and I'll try to answer what I started with. How can I go ahead and care about someone else? At the end of the day, I love my three favorite people are me, myself, and I. Those are my three favorite people. How can I care so much about you? I mean, Steve, you're a nice guy and all, but, you know, come 10 o'clock Sunday night, you know what I think about you. You know, see ya for 2 weeks. That's it. Goodbye. But how the Torah says I'm supposed to care. I'm supposed to show concern, be sensitive. I understand. We're all created with natural tendencies towards our own needs. The answer is very simple. Let's go back to the verse one more time. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Love your fellow, or that which pertains to your fellow, like yourself. Yeah? I call up Mr. Winograd and I say, hey, Jim, I'm going to be in Columbus. How about meeting me, you know? Can I stop by and see you? Okay? Can I stop by and see you? He says, of course, Rabbi, I would love. Janice and I would be happy to see you. And I say, I didn't say anything about Janice. I just said, can I stop by to see you? Well, I don't be so presumptuous, Rabbi, but I just assumed that when you said you know that Janice is my wife. And I said, yeah, you're 100% right. You are correct in your assumption. The word you in English, Y-O-U, is not singular. It's not plural. You cannot tell. You could be plural. You guys. Right? We still. In Hebrew, by the way, you can't do that. In Hebrew, there are different words for singular and plural. Ata is you in the singular. Atem is you in the plural when you talk to numerous people. So you, if I said to you, Jim, if I said it to you in Hebrew, you'd be stuck. But I said it in English. I said, you, I want to see you. Okay, it's understood. But doesn't you mean you, just you? How did you come to include the rest of your family? How did that happen? Because you got married. Because you had a family. There's an ability to expand your definition of self. Think about that. You know it's so true. If there's somebody important in your life, right? That becomes a part of you. That's the way it goes. You expand your definition of self. Your spouse, your family, your friends, your neighbors, the fact that you care about your community, that's leadership. Because what you've done is you've expanded, you care about important things. But you know what? You also care that others in the community should have that. You want them to have Israel advocacy. You want them to have safety on college campuses today. Oh, what's the difference? I'm not in college anymore. What are you talking about? This is the future. Yeah, because you've expanded your definition of self. True leaders are able to include more and more and more and consider all of it as part of themselves. So therefore, what happens is that you take what naturally comes to you of care for yourself. That's natural. There's nothing unnatural about that. Nothing wrong with that. It's only wrong when you limit it to yourself. That's called selfish. But if you take what naturally comes of care for yourself and expand your definition of self to include others, then great. That's wonderful. You're taking what naturally comes to you and you're expanding it. A baby enters this world with its hands clenched. Its hands are closed. One of the things that the Chevra Kadisha, the burial society, does, they try to do if they can, is to make sure that when they get the body ready for burial, that the hands are open. It's a very interesting custom. Why is that? One of the lessons that I had heard many years ago, and that is there is no more selfish creature on earth than a baby. The baby is so selfish. It has no care, no concern that you're tired, that you're exhausted, that you've had a rough day. It's hungry. It's dirty. It's kvetchy. It doesn't make a difference what's going on in your life. It has its concerns and its only care is itself. It's closed unto itself. When the person gets buried after 120 years, God willing, the goal is to show that they've opened up their hands to reach out to others, that they've learned to expand their definition. And they're not just selfish. They've taken the natural tendency for self and extended it to others, slowly reaching out and care and extending it to others. This in turn helps the relationship with Hashem as well. Because in time, with the kindness that's performed but for us by others, right? We also come to recognize all the good that God has performed for us. If I can show care and concern for someone else, it gets me thinking, who shows care and concern for me? And you'll come to the recognition that God does. So recognizing, like Mr. Ellman said, the key to unlocking all of the Torah is first recognizing that you have a relationship with others and you care about others. You'll also come to recognize Hashem in this as well. Therefore, the two parts of the Torah are really one whole. Interpersonal relationship as well as between man and God. This is really the message of what we need to work on during this time of counting the Omer. Of taking this message of Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. And I'll add one more thing, just very quickly. But I know the guy who I'm supposed to be treating nicely, sometimes he's a pain in the Rumpelstiltskin, right? Sometimes he's a royal pain in the neck and he says this thing and he does that thing. How do I get past that? How do I come to like the guy so much? There's certain people that you just don't like. I'll be honest. There are some people I really do not like. It's true. I'm honest. I'm not going to lie. How can I get over this hump? The words, the key are in the words itself. The Ahavta L'Reacha. How can I come to love someone else? How can I show care and concern? The answer is Kamocha. The same way you love yourself. Be honest with yourself. Are you perfect? Okay. Present company excluded. Most people are not perfect, yet they still love themselves. They're willing to look past some of their flaws and say, but overall, I'm a good person. I try, I make mistakes, and sometimes I have a rough day and I come home and I say something I shouldn't to my child or to my spouse or to my friend or whatever, right? I'm sorry, but it was a mistake. And you're willing to cut yourself a little slack. How can I love someone else? Kamocha. The same way you're willing to give yourself the benefit of the doubt, to give yourself the extra benefit, to give yourself the credit that you're overall a good person and you make mistakes, and you give yourself an understanding that you had a rough day and you said something. That's what we need to say about someone else. Yeah, some people get on our nerves, no question. Okay, I don't know everything going on in their life. They may have things that I'm unaware of, probably things I'm unaware of. Okay, I cut myself a little slack. I'm going to cut him or her a little slack. How can I come to Ahavta L'Reacha? The answer is Kamocha. The same way you do it for yourself, that's how you can do it for others. So to me, let's wrap up the whole shiur in one basic idea. Everything boils down to Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. Everything. Our interpersonal relationship, our relationship with God. We also learn that I don't have to actually love that person like myself. That's an impossibility. But I have to have the care and concern what pertains to him as if it were myself. And what if I don't like the guy? Okay, cut him a little slack the same way you cut yourself a little slack. If we keep these three concepts in mind, about how and what it is we're supposed to be doing in developing ourselves during this time period of Svirat HaOmer, of counting the Omer, where I'm excited as I improve my own refined character, building up towards the giving of the Torah, which is the source to help me do that. I will also be at the same time bringing justice and rectifying perhaps the mistake of the students of Rabbi Akiva that didn't show the proper respect one for each other. They both go hand in hand. So these 49 days, ladies and gentlemen, is the time for us to do a little introspection. I know we generally think about that only before the high holidays, but surprise, we actually do it more than once a year. This is a good time to do it. Of go through it, read through if you want. I know many of you are familiar with Pirkei Avos. At the very end, it lists 49 ways of acquiring Torah, and it talks about character development. Take one. Focus on one a week. Okay, you won't get through all 49. Okay, seven is also a good number. Focus on one. just grow as a person. Do something better with someone else than you were before this time period. To me, that's the whole key to all of this. And it just, I'll end with one last thing. I found it just before class, and I'll read it to you. The equal significance of the two tablets can be symbolically seen in the numerical equality of the two commandments, each of which corresponds to the respective themes of the tablets. On the one hand, V'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha. We say that for Shema. You shall love Hashem your God. And V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha ani Hashem. Those two phrases have the same exact gematria, the same numerical value, 907. Because they are linked one with the other. V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. Love Hashem, your God, is inextricably bound to V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha ani Hashem. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. What are your thoughts, ideas, comments, questions? What do you think? Such an important, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how many times I've said this phrase, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, and yet just break it down, the letters, the words, until you actually analyze it, there's so much depth to it. More than just the colloquial, yeah, I love your fellow like yourself. Yeah. There's so much depth to it.
But it's like we're always working on ourselves anyways. And as we lift ourselves, we lift others as others lift us too.
No question. Community is a huge help in working on things. That's the whole idea of working together as a chevra. You grow as a group. It's the secret of why my teen groups, thank God, are very successful, because they become a chevra. They become a group. And when some of them are growing, the other's like, yeah, I can go along with that. And the next thing you know, they're all growing. They're all coming to classes. They're all doing stuff. It's great. So true. Paula.
Okay. So how was it possible then that a great rabbi like Rabbi Akiva failed to convey this critical message to 24,000 of his students?
It's a tremendous question. It's something that many, many, many commentaries grapple with. What's ironic is who is the author of the statement where in the Torah where it says V'ahavta l'recha kamocha? Rashi cites the source Ze klal gadol b'Torah. This is the big principle of the Torah. Who's the author of that sentence?
Rabbi Akiva.
How can that be? So some say that that's when he learned the lesson. After the story of all of his students dying is when he recognized it, and that became his mantra. That it, you have to know the chronology of it. not a joke. It was a lesson he learned that even though these students were tremendous Torah scholars, but there was a certain breakdown of the interpersonal relationship. And he said, but look what happened. Just being a Torah scholar is not enough. And that's when he said, we have to focus also as much, if not more, on the principle about interpersonal relationships. So that's one answer that they give. Others suggest that we have to keep it in mind. You know, I find it hard that they sat around, you know, they're all in this, you know, this large base medrash. They're all learning Torah, right? And then what? They're calling each other names? Like, what does that mean that they didn't show respect to each other? They call each other stupid, idiots. I mean, that's hard for me to fathom. And we're talking about great people here. What it probably means is that on their level, there was a certain lack, not on the lack of, you know, like you and I perceive of where I'm going to call you a name and just wipe the, you know, I cancel culture. That's not what that means. I don't buy that. I don't buy that for a minute. What I think it might mean, and I think this is what some of the commentaries tell us, is that on their level, they didn't ascribe enough respect. I'll give you an example, right? Let's say I sit down and you and I have a conversation. We try to understand something in the Torah. What's running through my head? What's running through your head about each other? One could, I'm not saying it's true, but one conceivably can say to himself, listen, I've got many more years on Paula. I, she's great. She's got great insights, and she spent a significant amount of time studying. But I did a lot more. I'm listening with half an ear. Is that a lack of respect?
Arrogance.
100%. 100% is a lack of respect. It has nothing to do with how many years and how much more scholarship one has over that. That's not the point. I think that, again, this is my understanding of how those commentaries explain it, is that on their level, they didn't give enough respect. One may have felt like my svara, my logical way of thinking of it, is better than yours. Not because I can prove it, but do you know who I am? Do you know who I am? That kind of, but it's much more subtle. Okay, I can begin to understand that. Even though they all understood the idea of having respect for each other, on a much more veiled, much more subtle way, there was a lack there, perhaps. But it's a great question. Still,
maybe students. I'm curious why this phrase is so important, as we've learned over the last hour. Why is it buried in the middle of 50 other commandments, shatness, and all these other things?
Great question. Oh, my gosh. I don't have a great answer. I don't have a great answer. I can answer why it's connected to the verses pre and post, but it doesn't really address your question of why is this not in a much more prominent, like, start off, kedoshim to you, you should be holy. Why? Because I'm holy. And number one on my list, you have to, I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. I don't have a good answer for you.
One of the gems that occurs if you study, go on and study, and then you learn this, and it's one of the gems.
Yeah, but you got to mine deep to find it.
Yes.
It's a good question, Jim. It's a really good question. I got to think about that one.
And you realize the importance of it when, the greatest tragedy of the destruction of the temple was baseless hatred.
Yep.
Right there, you see, it's the interpersonal. It's not because somebody wore linen and wool that the temple was destroyed.
The second temple. The first temple was actually the three cardinal sins: murder, idolatry, and adultery. So, it's not. We didn't come by this by very simply. But you're right. I mean, the second temple, which is in many ways a much harsher situation because we've been exiled for 2,000 years.
Right.
The first one was that we were over and done with in 70 years.
Right.
Back on the land. So you're right. You're 100% right. I mean, it's been a concept that I don't think we, even though I love talking about other things, we need to come back to this on a regular basis to learn to have avat chinam, baseless love for each other. Even if it makes no sense, the same way that it didn't make sense then went for the destruction of the temple, the only way to rectify it is to do a 180 and to do it the other way. Have baseless love for each other. Do we have differences? Of course we have differences. Are we going to agree on everything? Heck no. But that doesn't change the fact that I have tremendous love and respect and I care about you like anybody else. That's the way it has to be. We are one people. There's no way around this. We are one people, and the nations of the world continue to remind us, and we're so thick-headed sometimes that we make such a big deal of our differences that we forget what binds us as a people. It's a big problem.
Rabbi, there's a question in the chat. Because we moved last week's class here, does that mean we're meeting again next week or in 2 weeks?
2 weeks is locked
all the hard work. Questions tonight.
Irv asked a good question.
No, 2 weeks is Lag BaOmer.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, you tell me. I mean, what do you guys want? I'll be done with my event in plenty of time. The Orioles will win by 9 o'clock. I'm not worried about that.
Next week's possible, or are you sure?
I mean, I'm thinking because Lag BaOmer, I assume most people are going to have other conflicts, whether it be weddings or parties, whatever you guys want. I mean, I can do either one.
Next week's good.
What, next week? Does next week work for you guys?
That work for everybody?
Yeah. It doesn't work for me. Deferrick has an event, but, you know, whatever. It's fine. I'll get the next one.
Okay.
All right. So fine. I'm sorry that, but I recorded and I'll post it. So if you want, you can listen to it afterwards. Okay, fine. So let's shoot for next week. It's the 19th. And 19th, 9 o'clock. Then we'll be back on schedule here. And we'll see if we can squeeze one more in before things go become absolutely nuts. Okay, perfect. All right. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Everyone have a great week.
Thank you.
Catch you later.
Bye. Thanks.
Good night.
Thank you. Have a good night.